back. WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. This is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And I know you're thinking, like, you're at Heavy Seas Brewery. Where are you going to get a crab cake here? Cooper's North in the Cooper's Chow Hound, and my dear friend Patrick Russell, who owns Cooper's down at Fells Point, and Slancha is bringing us a crab cake a little later on. Samantha's going to be here. All presented by the Maryland Lottery. I've got my Betty Boop tickets. Roz, I need some recon here. We're running low on tickets. We've got Ukrainian beer. We have red ale from the Pravda Brewing Company in Lviv, Ukraine, where they're getting bombed. It's awful. It's terrible. They were using their bottles for Molotov cocktails and sent an APB out all over the world to say, if you want to brew our beer, and it has a very, very interesting plant combination on the outside design, that you could brew this American red ale, and the folks here at Heavy Seas are doing that. We had Hugh on at length. Christopher Leonard, I got his card here, Brewmaster. Brewmaster, man, that sounds Willy Wonka to me, man. It sounds like you're in there and making all sort of things. And my wife was walking down the aisles here in Halethorpe and seeing all sorts of fruit juice IPAs. And you're the witch doctor of all of this. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Absolutely.
Well, I guess more than anything, this story today, yep, with the Ukrainian flag, sure, give me it as you know it, and I'll get you on mic. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm good. So we saw on, I guess, Facebook, this brewery, the Pravda Brewery in Lviv, they can't brew. It's banned right now, or at the time, that they needed some help. And hey, anybody wants to contribute, give us a hand. Any brewers out there, here are recipes of six of our award-winning beers. Please.
Unusual to give a recipe.
It is.
Fair enough.
It is and it isn't. Brewers are really collaborative. We like to work together, even if we don't even know each other. We like
borrowing to, is not plagiarism.
No. Absolutely.
In your business.
No, and when it comes to making beer, it's an art, but we're using science to create the art. So a lot of times you'll have a brewer who's like, how did you get this process to work for you? Because we can't get it to work, whether it's an enzyme or water treatment or chemicals, whatever it might
be. Whatever it makes the taste, that makes a peanut butter chocolate porter change, right, when it's cold and it's warm.
Right.
I think anybody that's drank beer, and I'm one in, and you have, tell everybody about this chocolate, because I love that. I'm a stout guy, right?
Right. So this beer you're holding right here is called Chocolate Volcano. It's a new beer for us, a year-round product. It is a 9% alcohol dessert snack.
Woo!
Yep, so that's why you got half a pour there.
No, but it's delicious, yeah, right? But there is a point where if I serve this in a chilled glass, mm-hmm, versus some other, that it will take on different properties and different,
sure,
aftertaste.
Yep.
And you just said enzymes. I never think about enzymes, mm-hmm, in beer, right?
Yep. Enzymes.
It's all you think about.
Well, no, it's not all, but yeah, it's very important. So in order to make beer, yeast ferments sugar, basically, to create alcohol, right?
God, and it tastes good.
So in order to create that sugar, we convert starches in malted barley into sugar, and enzymes are what break those starches down into sugar. So depending on what temperatures and quantity of water
it's
we
really
use to mix
good.
This stuff, breaks the starches down into
How
sugar.
How many times you get it wrong before you get it right?
Zero. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I would say.
No, I mean, like, yeah, trying to make this.
Yeah, no, I mean, at this point, it all comes down to, if you know the science well enough and you understand what your destination is, you can fill in the gaps in the journey using science and recipes and ingredients. So I've been doing this for 26 years, right? So a lot of the things about making a beer have more to do with what the goal is as opposed to
So what makes
it.
You make I got a little bit of this out of Hugh. We sat, Greg Vetter was here from Tessie May. We had a great conversation with him about his delicious dressings and his family. And it was really interesting talking to a dressing guy and a beer guy about, yep, distribution and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the making of it and the decision to say, we're going to make an avocado lime,
right,
dressing, and we're going to do it seasoned. We're going to make a pumpkin ale, right, spice IPA, mm-hmm, whatever we're going to do. You want to sell it, right? You want it to be appealing on,
sure,
the front end. If it says blueberry and stout on it, I'm probably drinking it because it's,
right,
matching, mm-hmm, cherry stout, things that I like, profiles I like.
Right.
But when it comes to selling it, how do you decide what you're going to do? And then there's the part where, like, you make the same lines every year. There's no creativity in that, right, for you, right?
Right. So, when craft brewing started in the 90s, most of the beer that was created was a brewer's choice. I'm going to make a beer like a Kolsch, as we were talking about.
Right, okay.
That's a traditional beer style that I've had before that maybe most Americans haven't had. Again, to think back to 1995. People were drinking Budweiser, Miller, whatever.
I was pimping. Right. I've been on the radio 31 years, but right. The first 20 years of our existence, we were completely supported by Bud, right. Miller, Coors,
sure.
Those brands, and the Clipper Cities, mm-hmm. or the Heavy Seas. Right. And I knew Hugh forever. I said to him 2 weeks ago when he came on, I said, does it feel bad for you guys that you were this little small thing, mm-hmm. and Matt Crowe would always say to me, dude, it's going to be huge, these craft beers, and Miller's in on it, and you know, these, yeah. It's what Bud's trying to do, and yeah. I always thought of this stuff as like motor oil.
Right.
Being a kid, yeah. from Dundalk, sure. drinking Coors, sure. Light, this, yeah. was motor oil,
right.
literally,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And at some point, America changed dramatically, yep. at the turn of the century, right?
So what I used to do is I'd get people in my brew pub where I worked. And
we now, where were you? Give me a little background.
I'm originally from the Philadelphia area. I grew up in southern New Jersey.
And, I'm sorry. It was a lot of losing, right?
It was a lot of... Well, at the professional level, says the Orioles...
I'll give you a little Philadelphia, yeah. love. We'll give you some Philanova, yeah. love here this week, too.
We're feeling better.
Dude, Philly's got Tommy Conwell, and it's got, yep. it's got pretzels, and yep. it's got the man...
Tommy Conwell used to play the quad at Lafayette College, where I went to school, at our... what the heck was the name of the event? But every year was our spring, like, outdoor
regatta kind
of
thing.
Called,
whatever, yeah.
All College Day. All College Day, okay. on the quad, and Tommy Conwell played.
And you turned into a beer guy. Yeah, God, yeah, bless, just, you, yeah. listening to rock and, yep. roll, right?
So yeah, that was it. But what I used to do is we would make a yellowish, you know, ale that was maybe 4.5% alcohol to ease the Budweiser, Miller, Coors drinkers into the program of what real flavored beer was. And then
we would always hear, you go over to Europe, they drink it warm. It's, right. different over there, you know, yeah. like, and you know, when you're 19 in 1988, like I was or whatever, you're, mm-hmm. like, hey, maybe one day my palate will change, but I like this light beer, even though Putin drinks light beer.
Right.
As we found out,
well,
here,
we,
you know,
yes.
So, yes.
So what I used to do is I'd say, all right, you've just had four or five of these less flavorful beers. The next one's on me, and I would give them the amber, the reddish, sort of the next step up of flavor,
and give you that caramel
toffee sort of. Wow, that's a little different. This tastes a lot better than what I was drinking. I'm like, yeah, well, that's why that one was free. And now you're hooked. And before you know it, you're drinking stouts, you're drinking barley wines. You know, it's a gateway drug. Like, you got to find your gateway drug, right? And for me, it was always English beers. Like, this, what I'm drinking right now is a beer we made just for myself. Because usually, like you said, I got to make
private stock.
Right. We got to make beers for, you know.
My own brewery, I'd,
right.
make my own ish.
So,
right?
So back in the day when I started brewing, I'd make a beer that I wanted to drink and I'd share it with the world. Well, that doesn't work anymore. Now it's marketing driven. Now it's sales driven. Okay.
So this is a British something something? What,
yes.
is this?
And I gave you.
Oh,
I gave
you gave me some.
Yes, I did. Of course.
Right. And I said, what, yes. did I tell you when you started pouring me beer? I'm like, oh, yep. God, yep. he's going to have me, nope. IPA. Yep. And I'm not hot. Poppy, a malty.
This is very malt. So this is a
brick. God, Matt Crowe, if you're out there, you'd be so proud of me. You know, that I'm, you know, I'm malty and stouty. And,
right.
Okay, so what is this?
So that is an extra strong bitter, we'll call it. So it's an extra special bitter style. English style beers are my favorite sort of. It
smells like something
beers.
I got cranked up on in London back in '98.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah,
so you get a little bit of bready, biscuity sort of. And it's nitrogenated, so it's got a real nice soft.
Just gonna make me fart.
All beer's gonna make.
Okay,
you
I'm
fart.
Just asking. No, I'm just asking.
Right.
No, you know, I'll be, right. honest with you. Yeah. One of the reasons. This is beyond you and Hugh's on the show. It's, great. Delicious and it's mild.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like. It's like an iced tea.
It is very tea like this. So the hops.
It's like an iced tea. So I'm not wrong. That
you're not.
Good.
No, okay. No. English hops, we use a hop called Fuggle in this beer. And I always call it black tea of hops.
It's, right? very drinkable.
Right, absolutely.
Very, very,
sure.
very,
yeah.
and not, right. as carbonated.
Correct.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So that when I would taste something not as carbonated. And my wife would tell you, leave the room. But
like, you can't hear this somewhere else.
One,
right?
of the reasons, nobody listens to this show. Trust me. Ask Chad Steele. He'll tell you. So with something that's flatter in its carbonation, mm-hmm. given how the first beers I drank were some Miller High Life and, mm-hmm. Budweiser, right. and, you know, things, yep. like that. When you're sneaking beer, back when you were a kid, mm-hmm. Natty Bo, right. you know, like all,
yep.
of that.
Yep.
Old style in Chicago, Illinois. I would drink Hugh's beer,
mm-hmm.
It pissed me off when I went in Bill Blocker's place at Red Brick and they didn't have Budweiser. I'm like, oh, God, you're going to give me that flat-ass beer with that Irish banger and mash English ale-style red pub. And it was a little snooty, but it was more like, eh, I don't love the way it tastes because it's a little flatter. Mm-hmm. And then there was the, is it going to give me a headache? Mm-hmm. Always on my mind when it comes to anything, you know, I don't want to feel bad.
Right.
You know, my parents were alcoholics, right?
Okay.
And I drank plenty when I was a kid. I've had hangovers. Mm-hmm. I've been married 19 years with my wife. You see me with maybe three or four. One time in the Vegas airport, I went over to the top. You know what I mean? And I'm not good with a hangover. I can't get work done. I'm very, you know, I like working and I like being lucid. So, you know, part of it for me was hangover and part of it for me was gas. Or stomach, like where I'm going to not feel good. Like I feel like I went to Mexico and had the wrong water. Was there a point where this became, as Hugh said, consistent?
Mm-hmm.
That it felt more, I don't want to say safe to drink, but more consistent to drink where I didn't drink it and say, no offense, Bill Blocker, but it tasted flat to me then. Maybe it certainly wouldn't now. I mean, I know he's a real brewmaster, but I don't think my palate could handle it in the same way some people's palate can't handle dark coffee, or dark chocolate. They like Hershey's because it's sugary. But we all have a sugar palate. We're Americans, right?
Yeah, ingredients are funny, too. Like,
I'm going to drink this. You don't mind that, do you?
Okay. All right. No, that's for you. You know, some, like anything else, I mean, you know, broccoli may not agree with you. Hops grown in England may not agree with you.
Like, perfect.
I mean,
broccoli's fine with me. Right. It's onions with me.
Onions,
okay, gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So yeah, I mean, it comes down to ingredients and how, not necessarily how the beer's being made necessarily. The one thing that
maybe I'm equating it with cheap tap draft beer when you had a kegger.
So
when you had a kegger and you shot beer into the cup, you always felt like you didn't have to have 13 of them, just four of them, and you felt like I should have drank bottled beer.
So
I drank bottled and canned beer because of that.
That's
and canned beer always tasted funky.
Hmm.
Bottled beer always tasted better.
Right. Yeah, I mean, technology's improved. The knowledge base has improved, especially in the craft brew side. What we know about the science of the beer and the level to which we track this stuff and analyze it, probably $200,000 worth of lab equipment that we have just to make sure the beer's of the highest quality and consistency all the time. And back when you're talking about, it was seat of your pants.
It was a batch.
Yeah, it was
a batch,
you know, yeah, that tastes pretty good. Yeah, I think that's okay. So, you know, we do things now.
I love hearing this because, I mean, I'm giving you, like, truth about drinking.
Yep.
I never think twice about being in a bar in South Baltimore, Taos. We were Nacho Mama's the other night. We were at the Perennial the other night. Just trying one of your beers, one of Union, one of my beers. Any of these local beers that didn't exist.
Yep.
And Hugh's really... Why'd you come work here? But by the way, I want to make sure we represent Chris Leonard's here. He is the brewmaster here at Heavy Seas.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing this incredible thing. I want to hold the can up.
Even
though it has cannabis on it.
Yep.
There's nothing
that's
wrong
actually
with it.
There.
Pravda, this is everything on here is written. Is this Ukrainian language or is it Russian?
As far as I know. I don't know.
Yeah. So this is an amazing thing you're doing. And this is going to wind up in bars all over the city beginning April 11th. And you'll be able to go in and get it. It's a red ale. It's delicious. It's not this, but it's this. And it's certainly not this, but this is delicious.
Right.
But this will be on tap, and people can go in and get it. What are they going to experience when they have the American red ale?
So the thing that's very interesting about this beer is... when we started brewing beer as craft brewers in the United States, we looked to Europe and other beer cultures that had established them. And we were the newcomers. We were the outsiders. Well, it's kind of flipped now, right? Europeans are making beers based on the way we've done things, the way the American craft brewers did things. Because we didn't have any real traditions for making craft beers. The Germans do things a very specific way.
It seems to me that in the modern era, you all were buying some really modern equipment over here.
Well,
in a different kind of way than maybe Beck's was brewing beer in 1988. Or maybe I'm wrong about
really,
that.
Really, really more of a philosophical change, right? So Germans would make beer the German way, with German malt and German hops and German water, right, with German brewers, and they're very rigid in the way they do things. English were making beer with English
in the
malt.
Way champagne is champagne or bourbon is bourbon.
Yes,
right. Okay,
correctly.
Fair enough.
Right, and in the United States in the late 80s, early 90s, we said, you know what? I like the way the Germans do this. I like the way the English hops taste. I like the way the Belgians malt this. And we took all their stuff and put it all together and said, we can make, you know, all these new sort of creations.
Hybrids,
if you will. Yeah, absolutely. And then a lot of new things came out of it. IPAs, strong IPAs. And this beer, this American Red Ale, really is a throwback to the United States in about 2002. When we were making super bitter beers, really bitter, not a lot of hop aroma, a bit of crystal malt, so there's some sweetness there to balance it out.
I skip that. That I don't like bitter. Right?
Okay,
well, like it just I just don't.
Right.
And I that's why I guess I became stouty because
right.
it tastes more like a milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
Like and that finish
right.
that you want on, especially when you get a peanut butter or something like that. Yeah. It really does. It's Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
It tastes
sure.
like peanut
yeah.
butter.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy how distinct the flavors are.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a recipe,
right.
you get it on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about brewing this beer. 4 weeks?
Well, no, we did this really quickly, actually. So our brewing manager, who's basically our head brewer, he and I work very closely together. He runs the brewery day-to-day brewing operations while I'm sort of running the entire facility. We saw this. Hugh said, "Hey guys, have you seen this?" And I said, "Yeah, I saw it." He said, "We should. You guys want to do it?" I said, "Oh, let me go talk to Kurt Kroll." He and I got together and we're like, "You know what? Let's just brew tomorrow." So we have a small, we have a big brew house where we make
brew
large,
it tomorrow.
We have large volume because it was very. Which recipe?
Man, small is incredible. Budweiser can't just brew something tomorrow.
Right.
I mean, I'm just saying, like when you're a small business like that, you have a lane, right? That you can say. This is a good idea. Let's do it.
And we usually don't, right? Because we are really set up to make from a craft brewing standpoint large quantities of beer relative to the other small breweries around us. But when
140th in the country, or
something
like,
somewhere
in
that, out of 8,000, right? So
wow, that's a hell of a thing.
So volume wise, we're very large,
beautiful.
Comparatively speaking. So we said, well, which one of these recipes do we have the ingredients on the shelf? Well, we've got this one or this one or this one. Okay, we've got the yeast that we can use for that one. Let's do this one. And you know what? This kind of is a lot like the Heavy Seas beers that we used to make in a way. We make a beer called Winter Storm that's come and gone over the years. Seasonal beer was actually the very first beer that was labeled Heavy Seas from Clipper City. You know, we were Clipper City Brewing Company. Heavy Seas line of beers. Winter Storm was the first one.
How many
one.
Years? 8 years, maybe?
So, yeah, a little bit longer than that. I think 2004, 2005, we sort of started to
shift.
Dude,
I changed branding, too. Right. This used to be NST. Now it's Baltimore Pop. I get it, man.
Yep.
You know, you have to evolve.
Well, the beers that had the Heavy Seas label on them just were flying off the shelves versus the ones that said Clipper City. So,
perfect.
You know, so Winter Storm. So this sort of goes back, like I said, 2002, 2003. That's the style of beer that people were really digging, really getting into. 6%-ish, lots of hop flavor and bitterness with some sweetness to balance it, but not a lot of sweetness. And kind of faded away from that in the late 2000s. People started doing something called dry hopping, where you're adding hops after the end, which gave you the bitterness, but in a softer way. The aromatics were a little more noticeable, like Loose Cannon beer, our flagship beer. We put the hops in later, and then that gives you a less bitter experience, but still the hop flavor and the hop aroma. So this beer is kind of a throwback in a lot of ways. Even though we're doing it for this relatively young brewery, they're using all American hops to make this beer. So
I guess on a global scale, you're making this beer, you're selling it here. It's going to be all over town. We're here with Chris Leonard. He is the brewmaster at Heavy Seas, having some fun. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill Industries. Want to give Lisa Rusiniak and our friends a shout out as well. We have the Putin Drinks Light beer here and all that. You know, there's going to come a point when this war is going to end and Putin's going to be dead in the ditch with a bullet in his head. And, you know, maybe one day you'll fly over
and
meet these people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Why not?
Like, they're doing exactly what you're doing. And I know there's some inspiration in all this with bottles that become Molotov cocktails that take out tanks in the middle of the war. We sit here and I'm just trying to get ready for the NFL draft and opening day, right?
Yeah.
And the Masters.
Exactly.
And, like,
right.
You know, we're having a good time.
Right.
You're drinking beer. But this is some serious-ish, right?
Right. And you almost feel a little guilty about it because what I just said, it was almost easy for us, right? I mean, you know, alarm clock went off. We drove into the brewery. We brewed up a batch of this,
and here
red
it
eyes beer. And you know, this is not even 3 weeks later that we got it together. So, it worked out really well. And hopefully we'll raise some money and some awareness for these folks. And You know, we'll move forward.
I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah,
come back again.
Yeah,
let's talk beer,
for
man.
Sure, absolutely.
Why do I like stout so much? What is it about the stouts?
I think it's, you know...
I was a Coors Light... The beer that we drink the most, and I've said this, I told you this a couple weeks ago, and this speaks... Mike Moeller, shout out Mike, mm-hmm. Don's brother. You know Mike a little bit, maybe? Well, he wasn't in the industry, but 1991, when mm-hmm. I went on the radio,
yep.
he was the Moosehead and the Guinness rep.
Sure.
And... I always like Moosehead. I had Moosehead Light Lime that was delicious summer beer. It was just really, really good. And it wasn't made with crap. It tasted appropriate, as I would say, right?
Yep.
And they did away with it. We went up to the province where they make it to see Springsteen 10 years ago. But they're bold, independent North is their whole thing.
Sure.
I know that's the lager kind of flavor that I like. There's some smoothness about it. And other than that, I'll try anything that says a stout on it.
Do you like?
And I'll try pills. I'll try Kolsch's when I'm in a restaurant and they have it. But I always opt for the stout. And you're doing stouts now 12 months a year.
Yeah.
Stouts used to be something like you see it in November, eggnog, and it goes away.
I drink porters, too. We have a really good porter.
What's the difference between a porter and a stout?
Yeah, it all depends on your perspective. There's really no difference. Porters were the first beer made, right? And then they made a stout porter.
I never tasted a difference.
Right.
And there's not one.
It all depends.
I always thought, like...
It really comes down...
How do they taste the same?
Really comes down to the brewer's interpretation.
Stout's sort of like... When I think stout, I think milkshake. When I think porter... I think milkshake light.
Right.
I think skim milkshake.
Right. Well, we have a porter out there that will be exactly what you want. It's not 10% or not 9% alcohol. It's
gonna be rocked.
It's 6.5.
This isn't good.
6.5. All the flavor and balance of that in a.
I don't live
6.8.
in Halethorpe. I got to drive.
I'm gonna give you 6-pack to take with you. But you know, traditionally, in theory, stouts are made with roasted barley. Porters are made with chocolate malt, and you know, they're really not that different, right? So
porters are made with chocolate.
Chocolate malt.
Go ahead.
So
science is Christopher Leonard here at Heavy Seas Brewery.
So barley, the malting process, barley is it's germinated, right? So you add water to it. You wait till it's getting ready to sprout, and right when it's getting ready to sprout, as if it were planted in the ground, that's when it has the highest level of starch available.
Flavor.
To it. Right, no, it has the highest level of starch available to it because it's getting ready to grow a plant.
Okay.
Right, so at that moment, the maltster dries it out so that it stops sprouting. So then what happens...
Man, this is complex.
So then what happens after that is then it gets kilned, and depending on the level to which you kiln it, it could be just really pale colored or it could be really, really dark. So chocolate malt is that malt that has all these starches in it that's then been dried and roasted, so that it's got this chocolatey color. Roasted barley, they skip the malting process. They just take the raw barley and they roast it right away. So you really don't get any starch out of it. You just get the flavor. So that's kind of the difference. But in the grand scheme of things, of your flavor palate, it's really not that much.
I'll drink almost any stout as long as it doesn't get too bitter or too heavily barreled, where it starts to taste like a whiskey.
So there's a full range of stouts, right? So Guinness is a dry Irish stout, 4.2% alcohol, super thin, super light, super easy drinking. That's why people sit around drinking it all day. To something like
bread
this.
In a bowl, they call it.
Not even, right? Because it's there's very little carbohydrates left. It's very dry beer. There's hardly any residual sugar left. It's a wonderful, wonderful beer. But all the way up to something like that.
The reason they drink it all over the world, right?
But this beer here probably is 300 calories per 12-ounce serving, right? So it's a completely different
I'm getting fat.
Perspective, right?
It's getting me fat,
right?
We're beach season.
Right. So
thank you, man.
You're welcome.
Dude, I'm so
anytime,
I'm delighted to have you on the program. Tell everybody about this little thing again that you special.
That's
Special Reserve.
Sir Dudley's Handsome Extra Strong Bitter.
So I'm going to talk about beer and marketing
alcohol.
And break every rule we have on the program. But back when I was young, like 14 or 15, you know, they had Miller Genuine Draft Reserve.
Yeah.
And it came like a gold package, so we like wanted it.
Uh-huh.
And it was probably just beer.
The same. Yeah,
it was probably
beer.
Milwaukee, old Milwaukee from Wisconsin. But when I think of like reserves and people making stuff like this, I've known beer. My friend Mike Wargo made beer for years.
Yep.
Doing this professionally is a little different than maybe doing it out in Perry Hall.
Could be.
In your basement a little bit, right? I mean, the equipment
different.
Is incredible,
yeah,
what
sure.
you do. The science of it, I would say, right?
Right, could be. I mean, I've known some homebrewers and know their stuff, man. They really get down and dirty with the science when they're brewing beer at home. But some guys just throw stuff in
you
the pot and
see
what happens.
You do this for free, though, right? Because you love,
yeah,
this is what you love.
That's why I do it. I used to be a consulting engineer for the first 6-7 years of my adult life, and I just decided, hey, you know, I'd rather do something every day that I would do for free, and nobody was ever going to pay me to play hockey.
Passion play,
or
bro.
Guitar, so I went to brewing school and became a professional brewer. Haven't worked a day since.
I'm going to end this relationship probably right now, but you're a Flyers fan, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
God. I hated Brian Propp and Tim Kerr, Shel Samuelson,
Hextall. Well, they never won the whole thing.
Let me give you a Hextall story. This is honest to guys. This is true. And I just saw Bud Becker post a picture with like Blue Oyster Cult at the Baltimore Civic Center in the 80s. Right. There was a giant mirror and the sinks in the locker room.
Right.
In the dressing room,
okay.
But it was a locker room for hockey players. It was a dressing room for Kiss. I had been in there a million times in a million ways. It was completely like this room.
Mm-hmm.
It was four pieces of drywall with gray, and it was completely nondescript with black square. It was nothing elaborate about you know any of this stuff. Where was I going with the story? I started the story.
Something about Ron Hextall.
Hextall.
Who made...
So 1984... I mentioned Gary Risley.
He must have been with the Hershey Bears at the time.
He totally was with the Hershey Bears. Thank you. So in 1984, I started covering the Skipjacks.
Yep.
I referenced Gary Risling, who owns Silver Spring Mining Company, where I did a crab cake tour.
Okay.
And he was on the 84 Skipjacks, and I covered them. I was 15 years old. 16.
Right.
Just turned 16. And... Hextall was on the Hershey Bears, who were then the Flyers.
Correct.
We were the Penguins.
Okay.
All right. So Gene Ubriaco was the coach. So some guy, Bob Erie, played on
Bob Erie. Yeah.
Bob Erie played on those teams. Lemieux's brother, Alain Lemieux.
Oh, really?
Played on that team. So, I mean, I can go through all these old hockey players. But in 19, you can look this up, 86 or 87, right about the time Pete Peters left, and right about the time the great Pelly Lindbergh left us.
Yeah, right.
And I met Eddie Frankovic that week, and we always reference that.
Yeah, it was the 86-87 season that
Perfect.
Hextall was a rookie. Yeah.
Hextall was in Hershey. The Skipjacks ceased to exist for a year. Between the Penguins and the Capitals, there was a year of independent hockey.
Okay.
Murray Bannerman was our goalie.
Uh-huh.
All right. Gene kept this thing together. He had another team, maybe the Hartford Whalers, or somebody sent him a handful of players. He had the Italian national team working on it. And we were just terrible. And the Capitals were about to take over the Skipjacks as an affiliate. Terry Murray, Barry Trotz, who's one of my dearest friends in the world, took over. During that period of time, Hextall's playing for the Hershey Bears. Dude, this was a pickup team.
Mm-hmm.
This 86-87
The Skipjacks team
was
not
an independent.
They were not AHL.
They were playing.
But they weren't
And they weren't fighting.
Right.
They were just dudes who could skate a little bit and put it together and keep the franchise together. Ubi thought he might get some ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Ubi went out to Chicago and ran the Chicago Wolves for 25 years.
Wow.
And won four Calder Cups, Turners, the whole deal.
Yep.
And Ubi's just one of the greatest guys of all time, as is Tom Gavin, who's going to be joining us momentarily. So Hextall gives up, I'm not shitting you, like 7-8 goals early against bums.
Right, against a beer league guy.
Bums!
Right,
it was March.
Right.
Got his ass kicked, and you can look it up. It might have been 11-1, 11-2, whatever it was terrible. And I was the Skipjacks beat writer, and I felt it was my, just like I did with Steve Bisciotti in Palm Beach this week, felt like it was my obligation to go and ask questions with my little notebook, because it's effing ingrained in
you asked Hextall.
So I went to Hextall into that mirror, and I went up to him, and I felt like I had, dude, you gave up 8 goals, and you're like, you know, going to go to the Hall of Pretty Good and play, but he was a great goalie, he just had off worst night of his life, if I ever talked to him, and I haven't in 36 years. He was in the mirror shaving.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm in there with a towel around him, and I'm in there with my beer bottle glasses, probably half of out of Hammer Jack's, and I'm like, so, Ron, do you have anything to say about, you know, because I felt like it was an obligation that you had to go to the high score, and you had to go to the five guys that mattered in the game. Yep. And I never forget, I looked at him in the mirror, and he was shaving, and he said, "The fuck you think happened?" So, Ron Hextall. Yeah, cheers to Ron Hextall.
Yeah,
for kissing my.
Well, he didn't hit you, so he didn't hit you with a stick. So,
do you have anything to say about that thing that they've created for a Philly fanatic?
The gritty? No, I got nothing to say about that. Can't say anything nice, you know.
You still a Flyer fan?
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Yeah, it's sad as it may be.
Right, I hope you suffer.
We're suffering.
Suffer.
We've been suffering for a while.
God, it makes me feel good to do that.
It's a joke. It's really
I almost
awful.
Became to be a Flyer yeah. fan. I yeah. came really close at right? one point when the Capitals and
yeah, it's gonna be tough being in the middle. I assume you're a Cap fan.
I'm an Islander fan now because Barry Trotz is family.
Your friends, okay?
He is my sense. Blood.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
wherever the Islanders go, I
understood.
Go.
Okay. Cheers.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
I love saying cheers to the guy who's out of beer, beer he made. And I'm
like, I got to go, man. My beer is empty.
All right. We're here. Cooper's is going to be here. Patrick's sending Samantha to bring the crab cake. It is a Maryland crab cake tour. It's all brought to you by our friends at Maryland Lottery, Betty Boop, Scratch-Offs. Here, you're not employed by WNSD. It's sponsors or agents. You want the pink one or the blue one? Which one do you
pink,
think you want?
Obviously.
Pink,
yeah.
Pink it is. All right. We had a $100 winner at Costco.
Oh,
Heavy Seas is here. This brew is the American Red Ale. It's brewed by Pravda.
All of my winnings will join the
Putin drinks light beer.
Join the cause.
Play fast. Win fast. Yeah. Our friends at Maryland Lottery.
Ice scrapers.
And I would be remiss if I don't give some love to our friends at Goodwill Industries and Lisa Rosiniak, who joined us this week. We had a great conversation about jobs and the future and everything Goodwill is going to be doing here. You know, Todd Crandall, who I ran into, Todd Crandall, I'm shouting you out from Dundalk. I ran into him on the street in Towson, and he and his wife played the game at Costas like 4 months ago.
Okay.
They just like snapped the picture on it. They just grabbed the app. That's what my wife does. She's
is that
lazy.
Right?
Did I win $100 million? Boom, we didn't win.
Yeah.
And then I tell her all the time, and this is very important with the Maryland Lottery.
I got nothing.
Jennifer, listen to me. Believe me now, hear me later. You have to go second chance. There's a second chance for everything. Second chance, it's on the back. Okay. There it is right there.
Very good.
Maryland Lottery encourages responsible play. For confidential help or information anytime about gambling problems, Chris doesn't have one. He has maybe a drinking.
Yeah.
Please visit mdgamblinghelp.org.
Tasting problem.
You know, dude, thank you.
Taste. Cheers.
Great segment.
I can't even cheers again. That's it.
I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson. Sounded good on the radio. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.